If you're more of a visual learner or you like seeing charts, breakdowns, and exploring other topics, check out our Student Loan Planner YouTube channel. We've got quick explainer videos, deep dives, smart money tips you can actually see in action. Just search Student Loan Planner on YouTube and hit subscribe.
Hello, and welcome to today's episode of the Student Loan Planner podcast. My name is Glenn, and today I am joined by Jana McKay. And today we are going to be talking about all things repayment assistance plan. So, Jana, if you don't mind telling us just a little bit, what have you been hearing about the repayment assistance plan coming up?
Well, I think one of the biggest questions is, when is this going to be available? Is it going to be the right plan for me? I think we are looking at a really big shift in options when it comes to the repayment assistance plan. And it's a little bit nebulous. They just came out with information and final rules last week. We are still digesting that information, but there's a lot of new definitions. And so we want to make sure that we clear some of that up today and go over some of the basics that we see will happen with this plan.
You did mention there's a lot of other plans. I think before we even dive into the repayment plan specifics today, we did want to mention some changes that are coming up to those other plans and that there are some deadlines potentially coming up that we think borrowers should be aware of. So one of the biggest changes with the OB3 bill is that plans like the pay-as-you-earn plan and the income contingent repayment plan are going to be discontinued by July 1st, 2028. But in the interim, for the next 2 years or so, that's a plan that some borrowers can choose to be on. Now, Jana, you just mentioned that there were some regulations that came out recently. Are there potentially some other deadlines that borrowers need to be aware of to get onto these other plans if they want to?
Great question. So we do think that there is a possibility that new enrollments into the pay-as-you-earn plan may no longer be accepted after July 1st of 2026. We have not seen this anywhere explicitly listed on the studentaid.gov website. Even if you read through the federal regulations, it's a little bit gray. But I think if pay-as-you-earn is going to offer you the lower monthly payment, if you can start fitting student loan payments into your budget, maybe you've been hanging out in the save forbearance, it's a really good time to get out of that status and into the pay-as-you-earn plan, even if it's just in case. We want to make sure that if it means affordability and the pay-as-you-earn is a better option, getting into it sooner than later and submitting that application before July 1st will be important.
Absolutely. And especially for those borrowers, I would say, who borrowed loans between about 2007 and 2014. If you borrowed all your loans after 2014, you're still going to have access to the income-based repayment plan. There's currently no limitations to enroll in that plan, and it's going to continue for the long run. Should generally get you the lowest monthly payment and be a good option for you to consider. If you borrowed loans before 2007, the pay-as-you-earn plan isn't going to be an option. But if you're in that window, the 2007 to 2014 window, you had at least one new loan after 2011, you're going to seriously want to think about that pay-as-you-earn plan. And you're going to want to think about that in the next, recording this today on May 16th. So again, by the time this gets out, you're probably going to have about a month to, like Jana says, enroll in that plan just in case, if that's where you want to be. So I think that's great, Jana. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, of course.
But of course, we're here today to talk about the repayment assistance plan. I've been hearing from a lot of the clients that I've been working with, they've just been wondering, like, what's up with this plan? Is this the best plan for me? Do we even know all the details of this plan at this point? And so we're going to talk about everything we know about this plan, so that we can help shed some light. It's new, it's scary, and we want to make sure that you have all the details about this plan.
Yeah. So let's just dive into the details. You know, it's the repayment assistance plan. We are going to say RAP a lot. That is our short acronym for it. So if we're saying RAP, that's what we're referring to. But the basics, it will be open for enrollment on or before July 1st of this year. And I say before, there's a slim possibility. So I would expect it to be ready by July 1st or right around the beginning of July. We need to think about what loan types are eligible and why disbursement dates matter. So through the bill, it did say that anyone that gets a disbursement on or after July 1st of 2026, their only income-driven repayment plan option is the RAP plan. And I want to be clear that disbursements might not just be, I'm in school, I get a new disbursement. It also would include consolidation loans. So if you are consolidating your loans and it disperses after July 1st, there is only the RAP plan. I've actually been working with a lot of new grads, and the question has always come up in the past, like, should I consolidate? Maybe if I consolidate, I can start working toward PSLF sooner. That is not necessarily the advice this year. And while everyone's circumstance is different, it's really important to think about, if I do consolidate, does that eliminate other options? Looking at eligible loan types is really important. So it is very clear that Parent PLUS loans or consolidation loans that include Parent PLUS loans are not eligible for the repayment assistance plan. It does include direct loans, unsubsidized Stafford loans, subsidized Stafford loans, Graduate PLUS loans, and also consolidation loans that do not include Parent PLUS loans, so direct consolidation loans. Loans that are not eligible would include Perkins loans, the FFEL older, either privately held or federally held loans. Those are only eligible for that income-based repayment plan, so not the wrap plan. Health professions loans, LDS or loans for disadvantaged students, nursing student loans, those are often held by ECSI. Of course, if you consolidate them into the direct loan program, they are eligible for the wrap plan. But if they are just on their own, they are not eligible for the wrap plan.
Yeah. And I think an important thing to know there, too, I know we just talked about a whole bunch of different types of loans there with Jana mentioning them. By and large, most borrowers we work with fit into the category where they only have those direct loans, those direct plus loans, or maybe a consolidation loan that paid those off. But it is really important. If you just don't know what you have, we highly recommend that, you know, now is the time to log into your servicer's account or the Federal Student Aid website. Take an inventory of just what you have to even figure out if you're going to be eligible or which loans are going to be eligible too. Because you may have a split eligibility case where some loans like FFEL loans will be on the IBR plan going forward, while the rest of your loans could be on the repayment assistance plan. So definitely a good time to be thinking about exactly what loans you have and then those eligibility, which ones are eligible or which ones aren't that Jana just mentioned. Now, once you figure out if you're eligible, then the next thing to figure out is what is your payment going to be? And this is one of the things, again, we've known for a while since the OB3 bill was passed last year, how this is going to be calculated. And it may be easier to show rather than tell. So if you'll give me just a second, I'm going to share my screen here. This is from the Federal Student Aid website. And it's going to be an option where I highly recommend that you all go and you look at these big, beautiful budget bill updates. And in particular on that page, you can see that there's kind of some tiers where payments are calculated. And these tiers are based on your adjusted gross income. So I know a lot of you have been listening to our podcast for a long time. You're probably familiar with what adjusted gross income is. But for those of you who may be new, in a nutshell, adjusted gross income is all the income that you earn from all various sources minus certain what are called above the line deductions. Now, that would be typically things like 401k contributions, traditional IRA contributions. If you're contributing to a health savings account, those are all things that can kind of chip away at that and help reduce it. And in a future podcast, Jana and I are also going to be talking about strategies with the wrap plan. And that's definitely going to be one that we're going to be talking about, is ways that you can reduce your adjusted gross income. Because as you can see here, it kind of goes in tiers. And we'll start at the bottom. If you earn more than $100,000, what's going to happen is they're going to take that adjusted gross income number from your tax return. They're going to multiply that by a flat 10%. And then that's going to be your annual payment. What they'll do then is they'll divide that by 12. That'll be your monthly payment. And if you have any dependents, and these are going to have to be dependents that are listed on your tax return, they'll then subtract $50 per month from that payment as well, all the way down to a potential minimum of $10. And you can see that then as you go down, as your adjusted income grows down, you know, here in this band here from $90,001 to $100,000, they'll only use 9% of your AGI in that calculation. If you go down the next 10,000, it's only 8%, and so on and so forth. And you can see over here the ranges of payments as well, not taking into account any dependents that you may have. They can start to jump significantly depending on which of those tiers you're in. This is a departure from different repayment plans that we've seen in the past, like the IBR or the pay-as-you-earn plan, where you know, they take your adjusted gross income and they subtract out a certain percentage based on the federal poverty guidelines, kind of similar to how a tax return works, where you have a standard deduction that protects some of that income from being used in the formula. That's not going to be the case here with the repayment assistance plan. That's a key difference and something that you're really going to want to know about there.
Yeah, and I think the one thing I'll call out that's the same is you can file separately and only your income is taken into consideration. But this does come down to, do you have child dependents? Whose return are they on? Different than our family size definition before, which is very inclusive. This is a lot more rigid. So it's important to be mindful about who has the dependents on their tax return. What does that do to student loan payments?
Yeah, great point, Jana. And I'd also like to just point you to a resource here. If you are curious what your payment might be and you don't want to have to do it by hand, we do have a repayment assistance calculator here on our website. You can navigate to studentloanplanner.com, look at our calculators, and the repayment assistance plan calculator will take you to this page. And so you can go ahead, you can put in that information about your family size. And again, as Jana just said, it's the dependents who show up on your tax return. So if you are filing separately, you want to take that into consideration. If you're married and only one partner has the student loans, that's probably who's going to want to claim the children in that year. If you both have student loans, you're probably going to have to negotiate and figure out the optimal strategy there. Then, of course, you can put in the rest of your information and you can figure out exactly what your payment will be on the repayment assistance plan. And again, recommend that you do that sooner rather than later, because we're kind of in that transition period before the plan's available yet, and you really want to be armed with as much information as possible. Now, there are a few other features about this plan that we want to make sure that we're sharing with you today. One of those is called the unpaid interest subsidy. Jana, do you want to talk a little bit about what's involved with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think about monthly interest, right? Let's actually take a step back. Student loan interest is calculated on a simple daily interest formula. So interest accrues each day based off of how much of the loan is outstanding, based off of the interest rate. And so we get a monthly interest accrual. So that just happens from I pay my bill one month, and then between that and my next due date, that's my monthly interest that's accruing. And so the unpaid interest subsidy is essentially saying, if my payment is $100 and my interest is accruing at $1,000, the government is going to subsidize or pay the difference. So we have, if I'm doing 100 and it's 1,000, 900 of that is going to be subsidized or paid by the government. And that is of any range, but as soon as your payment goes beyond what that monthly interest accrual is, you no longer get the benefit of that interest subsidy. I think what's really important here is, you know, the whole goal of this is that it doesn't lead to negative amortization, which just means that the balance is increasing even though you're making payments. That sets us different from other plans. It is very similar to how SAVE treated unpaid interest. So we will see that. A couple things that excludes, this does not include any interest that you have accrued thus far at the point of entering the plan. So that does stay in its own bucket. And it's only that monthly interest from one bill to the next bill.
And Jana, I want to be a little bit more specific about that as well. When you say one bill to the next bill, we're talking about the due dates, right?
Yes.
Compared to prior, how this has been handled in the past, the repayment assistance plan is very specific about making sure that you're making on-time payments. You don't want to be even one day late, or you potentially lose. This is one of the benefits you lose. I'm going to talk about another one in a second, but how important are those on-time payments for the repayment assistance plan?
They are imperative. You have to make sure that these payments are on time, which is defined as paid in full on or before the due date. So questions we have is like, what if my due date is on a weekend and it's on a Saturday and my payment posts on a Monday? Or what if it falls on a holiday? We really don't know those circumstances. So I think what I'm telling clients is if you are going to go on the wrap plan, make sure you set up auto pay and set it up to come out a couple days before that due date, just to make sure that you get the full benefit of the plan. We will talk later about forgiveness, but on time is also the requirement to have that month count for forgiveness. So that is also important.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's another benefit in addition to getting that unpaid interest subsidy and helping to freeze your balance anytime that interest would have otherwise accrued. If that happens, if you find yourself in that situation, there's actually another benefit that you get as well called the principal pay down. And the idea here is that depending on the size of your payment. So let's just hypothetically say, you know, Jana's example, the payment's $100 per month, but you're accruing more interest than that. Not only will the government subsidize that, but they'll actually pay down $50 of your unpaid principal at that point as well. So this is not going towards your interest. This is going towards your principal to actually help kind of chip away at that. I know for some people who maybe have large student loan balances, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, you know, that may feel like small peanuts, but it is, it's a benefit that's worth knowing about. Of course, like all things with the government, they like to make this complicated. So if your payment is less than $50 per month, like say you're at that minimum, $10, maybe you're a recent grad, you filed your tax return from the prior year, so you get 12 months of the minimum payment, which is $10 per month. Then in that case, because your required payment is less than the $50 principal pay down, they will only pay down $10. They'll pay down up to what your payment is. It's one of those small nitpicky things. I feel like for most borrowers, that's really not going to come into play mentally. As long as you have a sizable payment that's over $50, just know that as long as it's not covering the interest, you will also see that principal start to be paid down a little bit as well, which I don't know about you, Jana, but I know for a lot of the people that I talk to, when they're in that situation where their payments are less than the interest that's accruing, it makes them really uncomfortable to see the balance growing over time. So these two features, the unpaid interest subsidy and the principal pay down, I think psychologically for a lot of borrowers are going to be very comforting, knowing that you're not going to see that balance just grow and grow and grow over time.
Right. And the other piece of this, so we haven't talked about the term yet. We're going to get there. But the idea of negative amortization, when we talk about forgiveness in an income-driven repayment plan, it typically is subject to taxes. So that is one benefit, that not as much of a balance is remaining at the end because there wasn't that growth. So it does lead to less taxation if there isn't a tax exemption in place at that time, which is important. I want to add one more thing here that's really important about the WRAP plan. There is no payment cap. So for those folks that are high earners or maybe starting out low and getting higher and quick growth over time, there is no payment cap on how high this is going to be. Glenn talked about it's 10% of your adjusted gross income. Our other plan, the income-based repayment plan, has a ceiling. There is a hard stop on what that payment will be. There's a payment cap equal to the 10-year standard monthly payment amount. WRAP does not offer that. And I think that that also is going to come into play here when we're thinking about strategies, which we'll go into more detail about. But I think it's just important to remember that if I am a new grad and my monthly payment is zero to start, but then it's going to skyrocket past that 10-year standard amount, maybe this isn't quite the best plan.
Yeah, I may be getting ahead of myself here. We are going to talk about public service loan forgiveness and how it relates to the WRAP plan in just a second. But an example that I encounter a lot is new graduates from medical school, young doctors. Typically in residency, they are paid very little relative to their student loan balance. And, you know, their payments are pretty small. But at some point, these doctors are going to go out, they're going to become attending physicians, and they're going to have a salary to match. And in a lot of cases, like the benefit of PSLF is those low payments in residency for a few years. And then some of those doctors, they hit that payment cap for maybe 4, 5, 6 years. And because of that interplay with that payment cap, there's still something to be forgiven. Whereas now, like you're mentioning, Jana, with the WRAP plan, that can potentially really reduce or even eliminate the benefit of PSLF for some folks.
Yeah, and Travis has alluded to that in some of his newsletters lately, is that by design, these repayment plans may self-select people out for PSLF. So it's something to pay attention to, for sure. Let's just talk really quick about the forgiveness with the WRAP. You mentioned this, but both the forgiveness timeline and how it works with public service loan forgiveness. I'm going to start with the forgiveness timeline. I'm going to let you take the PSLF route. But unlike any other income-driven repayment plan we've seen, and Glenn, I don't know how long you've been doing this. I'm over 20 years now, so we've been around a couple different administrations and a couple different plans.
I remember recommending plans that don't exist anymore at this point. So
yeah, exactly. So this is a 30-year timeline. So this is saying that you have to make 360 payments in order to be eligible for forgiveness. This is the longest repayment plan I've ever seen that has any sort of forgiveness. So it really does take a long time to get there. Something that is really important that you also won't find on the studentaid.gov website, at least yet, is that months in income-driven repayment plans thus far that are not WRAP would apply to WRAP's timeline. Okay, so if you have been in repayment for 10 years, you have 120 months of payments, that does count toward the required 360. But if you decide, I'm going to go into WRAP now, because I want a lower payment, and then switch back to the income-based repayment plan, for instance, because the timeline is shorter, 20 years, 25 years, because you can switch between the two as long as you're eligible. It's really important to know that payments in the wrap plan do not count toward the timeline for income-based repayment. So while it plays well one direction, it doesn't play well the other direction. So we used to think, if I could get an interest subsidy or a lower payment, I can take advantage of that for a while. But it's really a commitment point here because you can't have that progress count.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And not to sound like a broken record, but I think that it's worth reiterating and saying again that exactly like you just said, that payments you make on the wrap plan are not going to count towards forgiveness on another plan. Even though we have learned you can freely switch between the wrap plan and any other income-driven repayment plan that you are otherwise eligible for. We're far from the only people talking about student loans out there. And there have been other voices out there who've said that this could be a potential strategy that, Jenna just outlined, you know, get on wrap for the lower payments for a while and then switch at the last minute. I know the SAVE plan, you know, it's on its way out. It had its own way of dealing with this, you know, trying not to let people get these really low payments for a long time, but then side skirt the issue and get forgiveness sooner on a different plan. And it limited switching after 5 years. This is just the way that the wrap plan is handling it now. It's just any payments you make on the wrap plan that count towards forgiveness on the repayment assistance plan are not going to count towards IBR. Or if there's a new plan in the future, presumably it's not going to count towards that as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So tell us about how wrap plays with forgiveness under public service loan forgiveness.
Yeah, so the good news is that payments you make on the repayment assistance plan are going to count towards PSLF credit. And because your PSLF count is, it's a whole separate entity from your long-term forgiveness count that we were just talking about, that actually is a case where you could potentially switch between plans that are most beneficial from year to year if you're going towards PSLF. Because that's just a case of you have to be on a plan that qualifies and then also have a matching month where you've been working for a qualifying entity. That's at least 30 hours per week for either a government or most nonprofits as well. So that's the good news. I know we alluded to it earlier. Because of some of the interplay of different rules that are coming up, this may not be a particularly beneficial forgiveness, especially for borrowers going forward. Travis has talked about this in the past on a different podcast, so I'm not going to go too deep into it. But because of the interplay of payment caps after July 1st, so new students who are starting after July 1st, they're going to be limited in how much they can borrow. And then because of the point that Jana mentioned earlier about uncapped payments, you know, the interplay of those two could reduce the benefit of PSLF for some borrowers going forward. But for older borrowers, certainly older borrowers with large balances, some of those folks that we were talking about earlier, who maybe after the pay-as-you-earn plan goes away in 2 years, you're looking at old IBR, which is a more expensive plan. In a lot of cases, you can get lower payments, like a couple hundred. I've seen it in some cases, $1,000 less per month on the repayment assistance plan. And that is going to count towards PSLF forgiveness. So I think it's really important to have a clear idea, like if you're going for forgiveness in the first place, and then whether you're going for kind of that long term, the 30-year forgiveness that Jana just talked about, or if you are going that more public service option route, so that you have a clear idea then of exactly how the wrap plan is going to fit into that. But short answer is, the easy answer to put your mind at ease today, the repayment assistance plan, payments you make on it are going to count towards public service loan forgiveness.
I think that's great. So we've covered a lot of the nitty gritty, right? These are the basics of the plan, but where do we go from here?
Yeah. And there's a lot of options. And before we get off forgiveness, there's actually one more thing I want to say. And again, not to sound like a broken record, but I want to bring it back to on-time payments. Because I don't know if we mentioned this explicitly, Jana, but we mentioned that on-time payments, they have some impact on that unpaid interest subsidy, on that principal pay down. How does the on-time payment, or what's the impact of making a late payment potentially on the wrap plan, and how does that impact forgiveness?
Yeah, it doesn't count, like simply put. So if it is not considered an on-time payment, it does not count toward the 360 required for forgiveness under the wrap plan. It also doesn't count as a qualifying payment for PSLF. So this is much more rigid than we've ever seen. And that's why I'm going to come back to set up autopay. Have it come out a couple days before the due date just to make sure that you're meeting that on-time criteria.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. So after today, if you're not sure if the rep plan is right for you, the good news is, you know, like I said, we're recording this in the middle of May. You're probably going to be listening to this sometime in June. So the plan isn't even going to be available to enroll in unless, like Jana said, there's some small miracle that they roll it out a little bit early. Starting July 1st, that's when we know for certain you're going to be able to enroll. So for the time being, especially if you're one of those 7 million borrowers out there who are still on the save plan, now is the time to really be thinking about what are all the repayment plans you're eligible for and which one is going to be the one that makes the most sense for you based on whether you're going for forgiveness, whether you're going for PSLF, whether you're going to pay off the loans, depending on your specific circumstances, your specific adjusted gross income, because there's a lot of moving parts and we're still at a bit of a crossroads where there are a number of options available to most borrowers depending on their eligibility. So the best thing you can do right now is just gather that information, know exactly what your payments are going to be, and start to make that strategy of what you're going to do in the short term as well as what you're going to do in the long term.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, short term and long term, because it may be great right now with the interest subsidy and the lower payments, but is this really a good long-term fit? We don't know. So trying to think ahead as best you can, but it's really hard to think about family size changes or income changes. We're all just trying to do our best, but there's a lot of moving pieces here.
Well said. With that, thank you for listening to another episode of the Student Loan Planner podcast. Of course, please be sure to rate and leave a comment if you found this information useful. And if you do want additional support as well, we have a number of ways that we can help you out. I would highly recommend subscribing to our newsletter. Travis, our founder, sends that out every Thursday and is chock full of information. And especially as we navigate some of these upcoming deadlines, that's going to be your best, most recent source of information. And he's going to make sure that you know exactly what's going on in the student loan world at any point. Of course, there's other ways to work with us as well. Jana and I are both consultants here. And if you would want a one-on-one plan, we can help walk through and figure out everything we talked about today about the repayment assistance plan. How does that apply to your situation and help you figure out if it really is the best plan for you or not?
Yeah, we look forward to working with you. We really do hope that this was helpful. And like Glenn said earlier, we have more to come on this topic. We are going to go over like, who could this be good for? How could we maximize this plan for its utmost benefit? So that'll be coming ahead in the coming month.
Thank you all so much. And we look forward to seeing you on another episode of the Student Loan Planner podcast.
Thank you for listening to this show. If you are not already getting our weekly newsletter every Thursday, you are missing out. We break down student loan news, updates, money tips, all in one helpful newsletter. Sign up for free at studentloanplanner.com/newsletter if you're not already getting these important weekly updates every Thursday.